Key West new mayor answers your questions, and we have holiday dishes on the mind. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Terry Johnston received 66% of the vote back in November and became the new mayor of Key West. She joins us to answer your questions about the pressing issues in the southernmost municipality. Also, as you prepare for a big feast during Christmas, think about the dish you're most looking forward to enjoying. We're going to look at favorite holiday dishes that people have brought with them from their home countries. And finally, we end the year with another live from the 305. We'll hear from the modern R&B group out of Miami, Soul Pax. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. In November, Key West voters elected Terry Johnston as their new mayor, and it was reported that Johnston is the first openly gay mayor of a major Florida city, though other communities have challenged that. But that fact isn't really important to Johnston or to a lot of the folks living in Key West. The Miami Herald's headline the day after the election, an openly lesbian mayor in Florida was just elected, and Key West kind of shrugs. Well, joining us now from Key West is Mayor Terry Johnston. And by the way, we took many of your questions that we're going to share with her today, issues that you feel are important in Key West. Mayor Johnston, such a pleasure.
It's nice to meet you, Louis. Thank you so much.
So real quickly, let's start with this. Why did you want to run for mayor?
Well, I've actually was a city commissioner for 8 years, from 2007 through 2015. And I thought that Craig Cates, who was the mayor of Key West for 9 years, was doing a very admirable job. So when the seat opened up, when Mayor Cates termed out, I decided I would throw my hat into the ring because I think I'm one of the most qualified people in Key West to lead Key West into the next decade.
During the campaigning, what were some of the things that you heard from residents? What are the biggest issues on their mind?
Well, I think most of them, Louis, surrounded around quality of life issues. Key West is a very vibrant, active town. You know, we have an event every weekend, whether it's a 5K or it's Fantasy Fest or it's a New Year's Eve celebration or powerboat racing. And most of the residents really centered on quality of life, noise, congestion, traffic, the cleanliness of the town, really having a strategic plan in the future, what Key West wants to be when we grow up, issues like that.
Well, you talk about what Key West wants to be. That's interesting. And as I mentioned, mm-hmm. we gathered a lot of questions from mm-hmm. Key West residents. And so let's hear from a few folks here. One is Scott Gerke. Sure. He lives and owns an event production company in Key West, and he sent us this question for you.
Okay. Tourism is a very large market here in Key West. But what are the mayor's plans to invest more in the locals?
All right. Well, Mayor Johnston, what about it?
Well, the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to do roads. It's a primary concern. We have we're a 2x4 island, but we also have roads that have fallen into a state of disrepair. So that's one of the things that I'm going to do for the residents. The second thing that I'm going to do in order to impact congestion and our parking woes is we have just introduced a master bicycle plan, which connects every area of Key West. And it connects every area of Key West with a safe 5-foot bicycle plan or a bicycle lane. I'm not sure how much you know about the community, but we're in the top 5 in the state as far as bicycle and pedestrian injuries and fatalities. So it's really important that we create a safe passage for people who want to get out of their vehicles and walk or ride the island. So that's the second thing that we're going to do. The third thing is that we're in a cleanup program right now. We're filling potholes. We're painting curbs, we're taking care of graffiti, and we're just making Key West a more visually pleasant spot to live and to visit.
Can you remind us, what are the powers of the mayor of Key West? What can you do and what can you not do?
Well, basically, we're a strong city manager government. So the city manager governs the day-to-day operations of Key West. The city manager reports to and is hired by the city commission and the mayor. as well as the city clerk, as well as the city attorney. So basically, we legislate. I run the meetings, and I'm the deciding vote. And I'm also the moral compass of Key West and the face of Key West.
And my understanding, but please correct me, is this a full-time job or no?
Well, I'll just let you decide that. It pays $22,500, but I'm in the office every day from 8 o'clock to about 4:30, and I'm there for one reason: is that I think it's really important that the people are heard, the people have a spot to stop in and express concerns or to express their delight with the community, and I just think it's important right now that I'm very visible and that we're listening and that we're being responsive to our residents.
All right, let's go back to some of the questions from our listeners. This one from David Johnson, mm-hmm. who has lived in Key West for the past 17 years, and he is wondering about the Keys overnight shelter.
The homeless shelter is due to close or move in September of 2019.
Yeah.
What are the plans for COTS? Is mm-hmm. the homeless shelter moving to the city property on Palm Avenue in Old Town? What about the residents who live near that property?
All right, Mayor Johnson.
Well, it's a really good question, Lewis. In fact, I was on the city commission when we made the determination to move COTS to a city-owned piece of property which was vacated by the Easter Seals. That property, a new commission that was seated, changed that direction, and they changed it for very good reasons. It was post Irma, and we are in a housing crisis also in the city of Key West, housing our workforce. So that decision was changed, but we are in the process of negotiating and meeting with the county and with the sheriff's office, and we will have a location for COTS, and we will have a decision made before our September deadline. And we've got several options. We've got several pieces of city property. We also have an option to leave COTS where it is right now and to coordinate agreements with the county and with the sheriff's department, but we will have a location. It's important that we provide an overnight safe shelter for those who are more vulnerable than us. So we will have a decision.
And just to clarify for folks who don't know, the COTS is a temporary overnight shelter, is what it
yes,
is.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yep. Yes.
We're talking again with Terry Johnston, Key West's new mayor. She won the election back in November with 66% of the vote. She joins us from Key West. And again, we gathered a number of questions from you, Key West listeners, and we're sharing them now with her. Let's go back to another listener question, this one from Erica Biddle.
What do we need to do to get a city on internet for all of us, like the visitors and the locals? I think that would be a major improvement. And also like a social service for people that don't have internet access because it's so expensive.
All right, so city-owned internet, perhaps, with municipal wireless network access for visitors and locals. What about that?
Yes, and that's one of the issues that we are looking into, Lewis, although I will be very candid with you. It's further down on our list than some of the other issues that the other quality of life issues that we are faced. But it really is an issue of our broadband. And we have a couple different vendors looking into that, as well as the current vendors that service the city. So that one, I don't have any definite answers for you right now, but it is on our list. I will tell you, it is behind transportation, housing, minimum wage, and some other issues, however.
Yeah, and let's talk about housing. Let's get to this, because we talk about the rising cost of housing in Miami-Dade and Broward and Palm Beach counties, but it's at a whole nother level in the Keys. Has the recovery from Hurricane Irma given the city a chance to try to tackle this issue more head on?
Well, this is an outstanding issue for years. We had we did an in-depth analysis about 7 years ago, and at that time, we identified that we had a housing shortage of anywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 units. And it's not so much that we don't have the housing, although we did lose about 2,000 houses or units, housing units, throughout the Keys via Irma. But we have had a housing shift, particularly in the city of Key West. We have about the same number of houses that we have had for the last 50 years. However, those houses have shifted to second, third, and fourth homes for people, and have also shifted into short-term vacation rentals. So the housing stock that was available, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, is right now being repurposed as far as second, third, and fourth homes and vacation rentals.
Yeah, and speaking of like rentals, I mean, what about like Airbnb? That's pretty big down there too, right?
It's very big down here. And we also have another issue. We have, of course, we have the military down here, and they had 166 homes that they housed their staff on base. Well, during Hurricane Wilma in 2005, those houses were destroyed. To date, they have not rehabbed or rebuilt those homes, which in essence, you know, pushed those 166 units of ownership out into our community, and that also took up the available affordable housing that that we had for our working staff. So we're looking this at this in a couple different avenues. We're working with the county, who has more land. We are working right now with the Navy, and they have agreed to demolish the 166 homes. So we're working with our new Congresswoman, Debbie McCausland Powell, to get funding for those houses to get rebuilt, because that will free up some of the available affordable housing if we can get these people back onto base. And we also have a number of city-owned properties that we are working on building affordable housing right now, and we are also going to put some of those properties out for RFP, which is a request for proposal, and we are going to be working with people who build affordable housing for a living.
And it's talking about affordable housing, our reporter Nancy Klingener did this recent piece on the proposal by Monroe County to build tiny homes in Key Largo, Ramrod Key, Cudjoe Key, and Big Coppet Key. But is this something that's being discussed for Key West?
Well, tiny homes, we have tiny homes right now. I don't know if you've ever been down here, but we have many, many people who live in 300, 400, 500, and 600 square feet. That's just, it's called an accessory unit for us in Key West. So we're very familiar with tiny homes. And it really, the overarching challenge that we have in Key West is that we're at the end of the line, Lois. So when we have a hurricane evacuation, we've got to make sure, you know, as a community and as a legislative body, that we can make sure that we can get everybody out of here safely in a 24-hour time period. And that regulates a lot of our building and throws up a number of challenges for us also.
Again, our guest is Terry Johnston, the new mayor of Key West. Okay, let's go back to some of our listener questions. This one comes from Tom Tyson.
Would the mayor consider closing Duval Street one Sunday every month, or any other street one Sunday every month?
All right. And also to expand on that is to think of it as a look at into it as a pedestrian only street, perhaps.
Yes. And the answer to that is absolutely. In fact, we have a Duval Street committee right now working on that very scenario, to close it either in the evenings after we have basically gotten all of our deliveries, or close it, you know, an entire Sunday, every other Sunday, or one Sunday a month. But yes, and that has been a request from our residents for years. And quite frankly, we just haven't had the political will to get it done. But we have seated a brand new city commission, and they are new and eager and very progressive. So I look forward to getting that done this year.
One of the other things, too, coming back to Hurricane Irma, is after the hurricane, one of the challenges was for people to get back to their homes. And the islands were closed off for quite some time. Now, there was a program that was put in place so that people, if they go through the training, some basic training, they would be allowed early access after a storm. Do you know if that's something that a lot of people took part in Key West?
Yes, we had good participation in that. And it's just a general understanding that if you come back here, you are not going to have access to services. And I think that's, you know, we had a lot of people said, I would like to get back home, but without an understanding that we didn't have working toilets, we didn't have electricity, we did not have water, you didn't have access to any first responders. So when people say that they want back into the community, you have to be prepared to be able to self-sustain. And I think that's a shock for many people. So the people that we have trained are going to be assets to the communities and not liabilities, coming back and you know, taking the focus away from our first responders that are trying to get us up and running.
You know, as I mentioned before, I mean, when you won, it was reported that mm-hmm. you were the first openly lesbian mayor mm-hmm. in a major yeah. a major Florida city. But something interesting about this is, look, maybe other cities around the state or even the country may say, well, that's a big deal. And yet, really, in the Keys, and I've been down to the Keys, there's yeah. a very different attitude. And I wonder if the Keys can teach the rest of the state something about really just, hey, you, because you didn't run on this. You ran on issues.
No.
You ran on something else, that this doesn't no. matter.
No, it truly doesn't, Lewis. And if anybody's been in Key West, I think it's one of the things that you recognize immediately is that we have a very open, inclusive environment. In fact, our motto in Key West is one human family, and that's truly how we live. You know, just be a good person, be a good moral person, contribute to your community, you know, work hard. And that's how people judge you, not by the amount of money you have or, you know, your partner preference or the color of your skin. It really is just the type of person and what you're contributing to the community. It is so refreshing, and you will feel it as soon as you cross the Cal Key Bridge and get into Key West.
It was at least a little refreshing to see that other towns around the state did say, wait a minute, we've also had a gay mayor or gay yeah. officials, and, you know, maybe we're getting past that. Let me finish with this. There was a question mm-hmm. that came on Facebook from a John Tishock. He says, Mayor, what are your plans to make Key West more environmentally sustainable?
Oh, well, I think that there's a number of things that we can do. You know, we're going to continue to make sure that our nearshore waters are clean. It's interesting that question comes up because we have the second reading in our first meeting in January of banning some sunscreens, which are hazardous to our coral reefs and our environment. And we are taking every type of measure that we can to make sure that we're lowering our greenhouse gases. We have a climate action plan that we are following. We have an active tree planting program right now in order to absorb some of those greenhouse gases and also provide us with a tree canopy. We are in a active recycling program. In fact, we're just getting ready to introduce some legislation to mandatorily require commercial entities to recycle. We are looking at ways of taking glass and bottles and using them for our roadbeds. So we've got a number of programs. We're an environmentally fragile island, and we've got to make sure that everything that we do is taking care of this community for generations to come. And it's very important to the majority of people on this island.
Terry Johnson, again, is the new mayor of Key West. Ms. Johnson, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you, Lewis. It was a pleasure to be on your program.
And definitely have to have you back sooner rather than later.
Thank you.
And again, if you want to share your thoughts on what are the big issues for you, you live in Key West, what are some of the challenges you think the island is facing and you want the mayor to try to tackle, that you want your public officials to try to tackle, you can always find us on our Facebook page at WLRN Sundial. Well, still to come, live from the 305 and the R&B sounds of Soul Packs. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, you're listening to the R&B group based here in Miami known as Soul Packs. They are the latest installment in our series, Live from the 305, where we feature the South Florida musicians that make our region unique. You'll be able to see a video of their performance on our social media, WLRN Sundial, at 305 today. On guitar is Julian Harris, and on vocals is Julia Kamide. They met in high school during a music master class at the University of Miami. Their musical connection was instantaneous. They were both students who were interested in attending Berklee College of Music in Boston, and Julian says he was looking for opportunities to make music, and then he met Julia. Now, Soul Pax draws from rhythm and blues influences like Otis Rush, Amy Winehouse, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, and Wilson Pickett. The name Soul Pax means soul peace. Pax is peace in Latin. Soul Pax is performing on Friday, December 28th at 8 p.m. at the Titanic Brewery and Restaurant in Coral Gables. Harris and Kamide talked to us earlier this month about what makes their creative process so indicative to this new R&B movement.
We all know the great American songwriter, James Taylor. He's got an amazing brother who is just a wonderful character named Livingston Taylor, who is a professor at Berklee College of Music. And he was doing a sort of stage presence slash songwriting masterclass at UM. And it just so happened that on that fateful day, Julia and I went to that masterclass. After the masterclass, we ended up talking with Livingston, and it sort of came out that both of us were trying to go to Berklee College of Music. He took us out to lunch. And so Julia and I got to talking, and I've always been looking for opportunities to play and make music. So Julia and I were like, hey, let's try writing some music. And we started writing these like acoustic songs.
We actually used to write a lot of these funny jingles together with the name Face in them. The first one was like Cabbage Face. There was Anne's Face. There was what other faces were there? There were so many faces. There were the many faces of Julian and Julia.
Did you know right away that there was this musical connection, that there was something there?
I think that, the first things first was that we connected as friends who were both interested in music, and we met at this event and pretty much hung out the whole day. And from there, we're like, oh, you know what? Like, this person's pretty cool. I thought if Julian's going to Berklee, it would be really nice to go up there and actually know someone that is there. And so we started hanging out from there. But the minute that I actually heard him play guitar, I knew that he was for real. Because before it's like, oh, he wants to go to Berklee, that's cool. But you really have to hear someone play and then play with them and experience that to really know. So the first time we hung out after that was definitely when I knew. And we wrote one song and like a whole sitting together. And most of all, it sounded like it came from one person instead of two separate people. And I had never had that experience before.
You guys have been working together now, what, 8 years?
Close to it.
I want to get a sense of the creative process between the two of you. How does that work when you're writing, coming up with music? But what is that process like?
It differs from song to song for the most part. We don't really have necessarily set formula. But Julia is an absolutely amazing lyricist. Maybe sometimes I'll have like a first verse written or something, and I'll give it to her, and I'm like, hey, like maybe we could do something with this. Sometimes she'll come to me with like, all this poetry, and she's like, hey, what about this? And, I personally take on the role of writing and composing most of the music. And then it goes, it's a back and forth there.
Tell me about a specific song that and how that process worked. Like, what one of your recent ones?
Mm. One of our recent ones. Well,
I think that, Inside Outside is actually the title track of our album. And so that one, we both kind of like have a part in all of it. But, Julian sent me this excellent track that was just a banger. I was like bobbing my head immediately. Don't you hide in this house, don't you try in the shed. And he came up with the initial arrangement. And then on that, I came up with like some horn parts and notated that. Then we kind of took it to our producer and shaped it up from there. So luckily, Julian is an excellent composer and arranger and comes up with all these excellent riffs and instrumental hooks, which is like just as important as vocal hooks, really. Think about iconic bass lines. I mean, he definitely is a hook writer for sure. And so you know, we have a lot of the same tendencies and a lot of the same influences as well.
We're very influenced by people like, you know, Nile Rodgers. We're very influenced from people like Otis Redding, me personally, Otis Rush. And so these are our personal influences that we're bringing to the table. And then just we're bringing in a little bit of some cultural influences here, you know, living in Miami. Like, you could hear it in our song Love Like This, especially. We've got some really nice, like, Peruvian drum rhythms that are playing over these quote unquote like Americana chord changes.
I'm speaking with two musicians behind the collective Soul Packs, Julian Harris on guitar and Julia Kamide on vocals. They are our latest band on Live from the 305. Talking about Berkeley, you're talking about, you know, going there together, and then you return to Miami. And I'm wondering about the differences in the music style and the music scene here in Miami compared to when you were up at school.
It's like night and day for the most part, genre-wise. The Northeast a lot really likes to focus on...
And this is up in Boston.
Up in Boston. Yeah. The Northeast likes to focus on a lot of jazz and hip-hop. And, you know, the two are very closely related, especially when they start bringing the two together, you know, doing that, like, hip-hop with a band sort of thing. And so that was influencing us a lot to write some more of our groovy songs, to write some more of our jazzy songs like Without Reason. You know, we're taking some classic American chord progressions that are coming from like Sunny by Bobby Hebb, or, you know, they're also being used by like Sly and the Family Stone, and we're throwing it into our compositions. But it's interesting for us to see where we could fit into all of this, because really we are rhythm and blues influenced music.
Because you grew up down here, is that you have that also, the not just the alternative rock, but it's Miami.
It's Miami. It's the Latin.
And that's
feel,
I heard that. There's you can't escape it, right?
And
you
it's a subconscious thing that kind of happens in our music because we both grew up here. So, but it's pretty magical that can happen, I think.
Yeah.
But you know, one thing that I would say that is similar, at least because we went to a music school, there were a lot of jazzers there. And there are actually quite a lot of jazzers down here in Miami. I mean, that's also jazz is what brings us, like Julian said, opening it up. That's what we want to do, that because we kind of grew up doing that.
You both teach at Miami Music Works Music Shop in Pinecrest, right?
Only I do.
You do.
I teach at School of Rock Miami.
You teach at School of Rock. Okay. Well, you're both teachers.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. I love it.
Educators of the future.
So I'm wondering, like, what's your take on how, you know, what is it you're trying to pass on to your students?
As I've said personally, I am very influenced by a lot of roots and a lot of blues music. For those who are interested, for my students who are interested, who really want to get into the science of music, that really want to get into learning, you know, well, how do I build my chords? How do I build my scales? What are the key signatures of these scales? I just love absolutely teaching all of that.
And I was curious, are the kids into that? Or are they kind of into the new stuff right now?
I mean, mostly what I get today is Ed Sheeran. But even in that, okay. Ed Sheeran is drawing from a lot of classic influences himself. You know, so even for the students that I have that specifically just want to learn Ed Sheeran songs, you know, there's Love For You too. I'll teach you the songs. Maybe I'll throw my little opinions about there and maybe they'll stick, you know.
And what about you, Julie?
Exactly. Well, I like to teach what the students want to learn. Like, say, for example, Ed Sheeran, maybe someone will come in and they'll say, okay, I want to sing Shape of You. And I'm a firm believer that if they want me to advise them on what songs to sing, I will. But if they know what songs they want to learn, then that's how I should direct the lesson. I want the students to kind of say, okay, this is what I want to learn, and I will show them what I feel like they need to learn through that. When I was a teenager and my vocal coach would say, okay, I need you to sing this classical Italian aria for me, I'd be like, not interested at this point in my life. Today, I would be all about it, but not everything that you offer a kid and say, okay, this is what I need you to learn, you know, they won't really retain that information if they're not really thoroughly enjoying it and having fun. So mainly it's about having fun. And through that, I really hope to teach people discipline, that you can be disciplined as long as you kind of look at your practice as a fun ritual that you have every day. Yeah.
Let me finish with this. I want to know about what's the focus for the future of Soul Packs.
Yeah, well, we just recently, a couple months ago, released our first album, Inside Outside. You could find it on Spotify, on Apple Music. Those are the main two. So we just recently came out with that. So mainly our focus now is on playing shows and you know, setting up tours and getting our name out there a little bit.
Now, what do you think, Julie? What do you want to see next for Soul Packs?
I mean, I definitely want us to tour a lot more, play some festivals, pretty much mainly get up into Florida.
And you just heard from the modern R&B group Soul Packs, guitarist Julian Harris and vocalist Julia Kamide. They form the heart and soul of the South Florida band. They are performing Friday, December 28th at 8 p.m. at Titanic Brewery and Restaurant in Coral Gables. You can see a video of their performance on our Facebook and Twitter at WLRN Sundial. We're going to be releasing that coming up at 3:05. Well, still to come, what is the one dish you most enjoy during Christmas? We're going to talk about the ways that South Florida celebrates the holidays with food, and we want to hear your thoughts. 800-743-9576. Tell us about your favorite dish for the Christmas holiday. That's coming up next on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, some of the biggest traditions during the winter holidays revolve around the table. Here in South Florida, it's common to see pigs getting roasted in their caja china, or families preparing coquito for Nochebuena. And for some, preparations start months, maybe even years in advance, because you got to get it right. Now, as we round up the year, let's take the time to look at the different ways that we in South Florida celebrate the holidays with food. How are you preparing your holiday meals? What's your favorite holiday dish? Give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. You can also Facebook or tweet us at WLRN Sundial. Tell us about that one dish. Tell us about that one tradition maybe that the family brought with them, and you're still doing it. You know, how are you celebrating the holidays at the table? Well, joining me now here in studio is Kathy Ann Paul. She's the owner of Sweet Hand Kathy and Bakery, that sells the Caribbean traditional black cake in Miami Gardens. Kathy and Paul, it's such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
I'm glad to be here.
And by the way, she brought us a little treat. She brought us a little bit of black cake we're going to be trying here on air. And just to remind people, I mean, we had Tim Padgett did the story about this earlier this week, but we're going to talk about it some more. And by the way, our other guest joining us is Carlos Frias, food editor for the Miami Herald and winner of the James Beard Award. Carlos, always a pleasure, man. Great
What's
to see
going
you.
Going on, Louie? Glad to be here, man.
And by the way, just to mention, not to toss you under the bus, you've never had black cake.
I've never had black cake. I'm super excited. There's a perfect rich wedge sitting in front of me, and I can smell it from 2 feet away.
We are going to get you to taste it. I had it for the first time just this past week. Yes, it is that magnificent. All right, again, 800-743-9576. We want to hear from you. What is that one dish, that one meal, that one, maybe it's a dessert or drink, that is really special to your holiday dining experience with the family? 800-743-9576. Kathy, let me start with you. What is that one thing? What's the one thing you have to have every Christmas?
Black cake, of course.
Okay, the black cake, of course, yes.
Yes. Well, actually, I'm from Trinidad and Tobago, the Caribbean. We are diversified in so many cultures that most of the country have just a few to choose from, but in Trinidad we have a large varieties of traditional Christmas dishes. Like we have like the sorrel, the ginger beer, the pancia crema, and the black cake. We have the pastel. The pastel was origin from Venezuela. We used to have a large variety of Venezuelan lists in Trinidad, so they have bring the culture to Trinidad. But of course, we have take their dish and turn it into our own cultural dish. So we have a lot of varieties of different dishes, include chow chow, which is like a pickle, and it goes with ham. And that's just one of our traditional dish, a must-have.
Chow chow. All right, so you're basically saying that in Trinidad Tobago, you take everybody else's dishes and you make your own out of it.
Yes, because we are a multicultural Caribbean island.
Yeah, but we're going to get to the chocolate cake in a minute.
See, I stepped in it a minute ago. I stepped in it a minute because she showed me the bottle of this punch that she'd made, and I looked at it and I said, okay, that could be Cuban crema de vie. Uh-huh. It could be Puerto Rican coquito. I said it could have been cremas. My first guess was cremas because you're from the island, so from the islands, I thought maybe it was Haitian cremas. And then she says, no, it's ponche crema. And I said, oh, the Venezuelan version. And she's like, no, it's Trinidadian. And it's true. She uses a special rum in here that I was not familiar with. And it gives it such a different, this may be a little trite to say, but kind of like a tropical flavor to it. What's the name of the rum?
Okay, why it's named ponche crema? Because we use the Forest Park Punchin rum, which is voted the strongest rum in the world. So, yes, it's a creamer, but because we make it with the punching rum, it become puncha creamer.
Puncha creamer. So by the end of the episode, we're all going to be lit because we're all having a sip.
Let's not say that on air.
I'm taking an Uber home. It's fine.
Thank you, Carlos. I appreciate that. Carlos, for you, I mean, well, first of all, what are the holiday plans? I mean, is it because I know that your daughters cook. So what do you guys have planned? What's the traditional Frias holiday family experience?
Well, we're gonna do both. It's funny because we have blended families, so like we're actually at my house, we're actually doing Christmas Day dinner. We're breaking with tradition a little bit.
Okay.
But there's always gonna be roast pork, right? Because it's for me, it's not the holidays until some piece of a pig is roasting. So so we're probably gonna do a big shoulder. My girlfriend does a crazy good just a rubbed pork shoulder, a couple hours in the oven, and it's heaven.
Something interesting I was thinking about, and this is why we wanted to do this segment. It's South Florida is really unique, and Miami especially, because you have all of these different people here from so many places. And then, of course, you bring your traditions with you. You bring those special meals. You still make them here. We typically think of, I guess, the American Christmas dinner, which is kind of like Thanksgiving. It's like a ham or turkey, but not here. It's the pig. That's a very big one. What's another big one? What are a couple other big dishes that are you typically see during the holidays in Miami, Carlos?
I think, in a Cuban household, in a Latin household, I don't think you can get through the holidays without seeing a black beans and rice.
Always.
And a yuca with some kind of like a mojo marinade made at home. Now, nothing out of a bottle. That's cheating. I think you're going to see those around. You're going to smell yuca and lechon and black beans and rice throughout Miami come the 24th.
Yeah, and Kathy, what about you? I mean, because you kind of went over a long list of some of the stuff that's very traditional in Trinidad. But, I mean, is that stuff that you're still preparing, that the family's still preparing, you bring it with you?
Yes. Must see on the table, definitely ham. A pork leg is going to be roast. We have something called Christmas rice, and it's a red rice, or sometimes it's fish or pink rice. We will get potato salad. We will get pigeon peas on, must have a stew pork, of course. Mm. Actually, for Thanksgiving, the American do turkey. For Christmas in the Caribbean, it's all about pork. You bake it, you roast it, you cure it, however it is, it got to be pork.
This woman's speaking our language right here.
Pork. That is the key to Christmas. Again, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-9576. We'd love to hear what is that traditional Christmas dinner at your house, or maybe even just one dish that's really special that you brought with you, that the family's brought with you, you're still making years later. Let's go to the phones. I'm going to go to Michelle in Miami.
Hi.
Yes. Hey, Michelle.
Hello. So my favorite all-time drink to accompany whatever we do during our Caribbean holidays. We're Jamaican, and we drink Jamaican sorrel. And sorrel is a wonderful drink that we also blend, at least in my family, with 100-proof rum. And then we make it sometimes a month up to a year before it ferments with pimento seeds. And by the time you open it, it's strong and it tastes wonderful.
Wow. That's, oh gosh. Yeah. You know what? I'm glad that I have lunch right after the show. So, Michelle, Michelle, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thanks for sharing.
Absolutely.
And
no problem.
Have a Merry Christmas and a wonderful New Year. You know what? And we're going to get to the phones here again. I want to hear more about the recipes that you enjoy during the holidays. The other thing, too, is I wanted to ask about, so we talk about dishes, we talk about drinks. We're going to get some of those as well from some of our callers. And then desserts. Yes, we're going to get to the black cake here in a second. But Carlos, what are, you know, that typical Christmas dessert that you tend to see this time of year?
I mean, I think what's cool about Miami is you get such a blending of cultures that you'll see everything from, you know, sweet potato pie to flan all on the same table. Like, I know that I look forward to the holidays because I get to have, like, American food. Like, we have traditional holiday American. Like, I look forward to roasted yams covered in marshmallows because I don't have those at any other time of the year. So I'm excited to have that.
All right, let's get to this because I've been holding off a little bit. Black cake. I was introduced to this week. Tim Padgett did a piece about black cake and highlighted your cake along with another, I believe it was a Haitian recipe, Jamaican recipe, excuse me, a Jamaican recipe along with yours. And we taste tested it. Look, I loved yours. Okay, let me just say that. But no, I've never had this before. So real quickly, what goes into the black cake?
Well, as of January 1st, we start preparing the fruits.
The fruits a year in advance?
A year in advance. So it cochemer into the alcohol. We soak it with brandy. But actually, people soak it with whatever choice of alcohol they want to. But it was origin from Trinidad. We do it with brandy and cherry wine, and we soak it. We will soak raisins. We will soak currants, prunes, tutti frutti, which we call mixed peel in Trinidad. And we put cherry, and some people will put walnuts. As we know, some people are allergic to walnuts. I will not use walnuts in it because I am doing it for different people with different allergies and stuff. So we soak that fruit from 1 year to the next year, and then we blend it together. And
so for a year, the ingredients are soaking in the alcohol to make this cake. Have you heard of that? This is new to me.
No, it's like this is the boozy version of fruitcake.
Okay,
like, you know, instead of saying just we're gonna candy these fruits. No, we'll see your candied fruits, and we raised you 1 year aged.
I'm just going to tell you, I'm not a fan of fruitcake. This is not fruitcake. This is amazing. Okay, so by the way, this is, as I said, this is the first time you've ever tried this.
Yes, I've not yet had a piece.
Go ahead, and this is Carlos Frias. This is the Miami Herald food reporter tasting black cake for the first time on air, and then he's going to give us his take. One of the things as he's doing that, by the way, Kathy, is there's this richness to it. It reminds me, and I'm not the best foodie that I could describe it. It reminds me of a really soft kind of brownie. It's just very soft, and it takes a while to be able to chew it, but that also just leaves for really more enjoyment. What creates that?
What creates that is that we caramel our own sugar. We put the pot on the fire, and we hot the pot, and we put the sugar in it until it become caramel. And after, the next stage is being black, which is burnt. So we burn the sugar in order to make the color. And with the fruits, of course, it's black, so it helps.
Wow.
So it's a long procedure. It's a very rich cake. It's time-taking. And that's why it is so special, because it's a lot. It's a lot to prepare it.
All right. Carlos, you've had, for the first time ever, black cake. Trinidadian black cake, by the way. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's very rich, but after every bite, like once it's cleared your palate, you swallow it and you get like all these flavors. You get that the toasted caramelization from the sugar. Yes. You get that brandy, like the brandy fills like the back of your mouth. It's like in your nose. It's in your head. It's really, and it's, and I, this is to me is like, get us is like a, is you enjoy a small serving. Like you get a piece and you don't shovel it in. You have like, you enjoy these pieces of it because it's very rich. Yes. So,
and I think that's the thing about too, about cake is like, if you are shoveling it in, it's just sugar. It's not good. This is one you have to take your time with, and you don't need a big piece, just a couple of bites, and you're pretty much satisfied. Let me go back to the phones again, 800-743-9576. We want to know how you celebrate the Christmas holiday at the table. What's a recipe, maybe a tradition for you and your family? Let me go to Michael in Miami. Michael, you're interested in this black cake.
Actually, yes, because my wife is from Trinidad. Actually, for our wedding, we had a black cake for our wedding. And my mother-in-law usually makes it for us, but she's decided that this year it's too much work.
Well, it takes a year, according to Kathy. If you do it right, it takes a year to put this together.
Yeah, it does. And is this something that Miss Paul, is this something that she sells also?
Yeah, or... this is at her bakery.
Where is her bakery located?
Yes.
Go ahead, Kathy. Tell them.
Yes, we have cakes available at my restaurant at 20316 Northwest 2nd Avenue, Miami Gardens, zip code 33169. We have a large variety of cake still available.
Okay.
And by the way, we'll put this up on our Facebook too, so you could find her bakery. And I'd imagine those are going to go pretty fast. But Michael, thank you so much. I appreciate it. That's interesting. He had a black cake for his wedding. So, yeah, all right. Hey, whatever. You know, that is definitely not the traditional wedding cake. But then again, I've never been married. What do I know? Let me go to Gene in Lake Worth. Gene, thanks for hanging on.
Hi, how are you?
Doing good. So what's a traditional family dish for you during the holidays?
Well, Christmas Eve has always been a traditional family style dinner, a fish dinner. And my favorite part of it is, and all I do is make this one salad, which is an octopus salad, or pulpa, as it's in Italian. And it consists of octopus, scongeli, calamari, and shrimp. And they're all cooked perfectly and put together with some celery, a limited amount of garlic, olive oil, salt and pepper, and parsley, and tons of lemon.
Okay.
Most delicious salad you ever tasted.
This is part of the Feast of the Seven Fishes, basically.
I guess, yes.
Yeah, it's an Italian, the Italian custom, basically it's the Italian version of like what Latin Americans do is their Noche Buena. They call it just the Eve, or they call it the Feast of the Seven Fishes, and it's all seafood.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's not the only thing that's made, and I won't hold you up very long. My wife is making linguine and clam sauce, salmon. Of course, it's an eclectic crowd that's coming, and a couple of other things.
Wow.
Listen, have a great holiday. It was nice talking to you.
Gene, thanks so much. Merry Christmas to you, and a Happy New Year. Octopus. So that's the main part of the salad, though. It's the octopus I'm taking. It didn't seem like there were a lot of vegetables.
Yeah, it's a very Italian, and I mean the Spanish do it too, where they cook the octopus and then it's sliced thin and served cold, and it's got a good texture. It's really good. You serve it like plenty of olive oil and vinegar, so it's got a nice salty, you know, briny flavor to it.
Let me finish with this real quickly, and I want to hear from both of you on this, is that, you know, you think about Christmas, and this is an important time for retail, but what about for the food industry? For Kathy, for you, December, the Christmas holidays, the holidays in general, how important is that season for you?
It is very important to me because we migrate to the United States, and we have been grown to eat our cultural food, and it is not... You cannot go on the store shelf and get the food. So it is very busy for me along this time here because all the Trinidadians or the Caribbean's nationality comes to the restaurant and get different or variety of different traditional dish.
Because it's hard to get a hold of those things.
Yes.
This is the time to get those
yes.
things. That's very interesting. Carlos, I mean, you know, yeah, in the restaurant business, I mean, is this a good time or is it kind of slow because people want to eat at home with family?
I think you get both. I mean, I think we forget the fact that we have folks who just don't celebrate Christmas, you know?
And, that's true, too. Let me just... Yeah. And you know what? We actually had Jewish leaders here, and they had a great story about how they love to eat out Chinese on Christmas. So, and they told us a great story about that. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. But what... I mean, like, you know, what... if you were to recommend one place that if people didn't want to cook, go out to eat...
Okay,
what's a good Christmas place?
Well, actually, I'll say this. I can't think of one right off the top of my head, but I will say that Miami.com, which is the kind of the going out website for the Miami Herald, we have lists together of some of the best places where you can get a Christmas meal and somebody else cooks.
There you go. You don't have to do any work. Let somebody else do it. Carlos Frias, again, food editor for the Miami Herald. We also heard from Kathy Ann Paul, owner of Sweet Hand Kathy and Bakery. And again, they sell in Miami Gardens. They sell the black cake and other things. We'll post that up on our Facebook so you can find it if you're looking for some black cake. Because I've got some right here in the studio, and it's fantastic. Kathy, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And Carlos, always a pleasure, man.
Oh, happy holidays, Louis.
I knew I was going to get it. Merry Christmas to everybody. I really appreciate it. Well, that's our program for this Thursday, December 20th. This, by the way, is the last live Sundial of the year. Next week, we don't have any shows on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. We will have special Best of Sundial shows on the 26th and 27th. We'll revisit our conversations with a number of folks that we talk to throughout the year. This has been a wonderful year, and I really appreciate everything from all of you for participating online and listening to the program. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful Merry Christmas. Have a great New Year. We'll be back again in 2019. I'm Luis Hernandez for the Sundial team for WLRN. Have a good one. We'll talk again soon.